just rattles my cage to think that he is done with his sentence and it's over for him.
Bill Allen is being released today and won't face child sex abuse charges. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a book that examines how oil and politics mix in Alaska.
The more that we as a state have depended on oil, the more I think overly cozy relationships develop.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
It looks like the key government witness in the federal corruption case in Alaska will not face charges of child sexual abuse. Deputy Attorney General Richard Svobodny says the case is closed unless someone provides new information or there are federal charges against 74-year-old Bill Allen. Svobodny says prosecutors weren't able to corroborate allegations made by about five witnesses. Anchorage police conducted two investigations into whether Allen had sex with an underage girl in the 1990s. One case was stopped, and federal investigators declined to file charges in the second. Senator Lisa Murkowski and others have criticized the feds for not moving forward because their case could have been easier to prove than the state's. Allen was accused of transporting teenage girls across state lines for sex, which is a federal crime. A few months ago, Murkowski asked the U.S. Attorney General why his team wasn't pursuing Allen. She is concerned the feds might be giving him a pass because he helped them out in the case against the late Senator Ted Stevens.
To think that he might have gotten away with it because of his stature in the community at that time, the relationships that he had, and the fact that he might have been working an arrangement, a deal, if you will, to avoid all this. And in the meantime, you've got a young woman whose life has been irreparably harmed, and perhaps more young women out there. We don't know that for certain. It seems to me that there has been a real failure of process here.
Allen ran the Vico Corporation and pleaded guilty to tax violations and bribing state lawmakers. While his testimony led to Ted Stevens' conviction in 2008, a federal judge threw everything out because prosecutors concealed evidence from Stevens' team. A report released yesterday showed they withheld information that would have seriously damaged the credibility of Bill Allen. Senator Lisa Murkowski expressed disgust today that Allen won't be charged.
It just rattles my cage to think that he is done with his sentence and it's over for him. And yet you have a man who lost his, it was more than an election, it was Ted Stevens' career and reputation brought down by Bill Allen, who is now walking out of jail.
Allen was sentenced to 3 years for his bribery and tax evasion pleas and was scheduled to be released today. When Alaska journalists Tony Hopfinger and Amanda Coyne started covering the corruption probe, it didn't take them long to see the potential for a book. The scandal began with an oil tax vote in the state legislature in 2006. Along the way, Ted Stevens lost his Senate seat, state lawmakers went to prison, and Sarah Palin rose to become a national celebrity. Earlier this month, Crude Awakening, Money, Mavericks, and Mayhem in Alaska was published. I sat down with the husband and wife team to talk about the twists and turns of the corruption investigation and the political fallout in the state. Hopfinger says it tells the story of oil and Alaska politics over the last 40 years.
You know, there's always been a particular dominant industry out in Alaska. I mean, there was fishing, obviously, before oil. And every state has a dominant industry. But what makes obviously Alaska so unique is that more than 85% of our tax revenue comes from oil. And because the fact that the oil exists on state land, it's not in, say, private lands like in Texas or North Dakota, where and the more that we as a state have depended on oil, the more I think it things get muddled and cozy, really overly cozy relationships develop.
Do you think in light of that dependence, was this corruption scandal inevitable?
Well, yeah, I guess to some extent. I mean, you'd always hope that people would act better. That's a good question. What do you think? I mean, do you think that it's...
Yeah, I mean...
Was it inevitable? Was the writing
probably,
on the wall?
Probably. It was probably inevitable. You know what surprised me? One of the many things that surprised me in researching this book is how, and particularly give a shout out to the Anchorage Daily News and Rich Maurer at the Anchorage Daily News, he'd been, you know, trying to draw attention to the legislators' relationship with oil companies for his whole career, basically, since he started here. And, you know, it was just so interesting going through all those archives and reading all those stories. And having apparently none of them really stick. I mean, nothing really stuck. And, you know, so I kind of now have a better understanding of the reaction when the FBI did finally come in. You know, the elated reaction across Alaska, like that finally something is being done, because those stories just didn't stick. And so I don't know, the inevitability of it. Yeah, probably.
The enormous and messy sort of explosion of the corruption investigation took a lot of people down. Ted Stevens, who at one time seemed pretty much untouchable. Yet, even though it destroyed his political career, it ultimately was an investigation that was mired in its own problems, and much of it was dismissed. Were you surprised by how this happened or how this went down?
You know, the specifics in the corners cut by prosecutors in Ted Stevens's case, that was like one set of problems. And he had these other set of problems that related to more of some of the state cases as far as the questions of whether the Justice Department covered up the allegations that Bill Allen had carried on sexual relationships with underage girls. And because the latter there, we had done a lot of reporting on it, and we had questions about what the FBI and the prosecutors were doing. So by the time things got all screwed up in the Stevens case and subsequent fallout, it didn't surprise me. I felt that the Justice Department, for whatever reason, they had not honed that investigation, and they found themselves cutting corners in order to justify their prosecutions.
Yeah.
Not to say, though, that Ted Stevens should not have been hanging out with Bill Allen and having him work on his home. And Pete Codd and Vic Corn should not have been sitting around in the Baranoff with Bill Allen eating cheeseburgers and getting drunk with him.
Well, it does seem mind-boggling totally to me, and has since these missteps within the prosecution came to light. You would think that when you're dealing with charges against the most powerful Republican senator in U.S. history, that you would be above reproach in every bit of your research and your evidence gathering.
I'll give you an anecdote that we have in the book. Special Agent Mary Beth Kepner, who led the Polar Pen investigation, I had coffee with her in May of 2008. And she asked me, what do you think the quid pro quo is with Ted Stevens? I said, you guys have already searched his house and you don't know like what you're going to actually – where you're headed with this? You know, and it was only a couple months later that they actually then indicted him on the failing to disclose. But they were trying to get him on bribery and they didn't have it. And then they screwed up the failing to disclose.
How much do you think Sarah Palin benefited from this corruption scandal?
Well, I think her whole career depended on it.
I agree. Yeah, I think that the pendulum swung, you know, in reaction to then Governor Murkowski's quote unquote giveaway to the oil industry, the subsequent revelation that a bunch of lawmakers are under investigation by the Justice Department. It all sort of seemed to give her credence when she had said the good old boys were controlling everything and we were selling ourselves out as a state, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, sort of her rise in politics on the state level definitely corresponds to all of that.
Yeah, it was really interesting to kind of look back and watch what she was saying. She was, you know, even in the primary, she was running against, you know, John Binkley and Frank Murkowski, and or even, you know, we could even go to the general with against Tony Knowles and Andrew Halcrow in 2006. And she was really the only anti-oil candidate of the three. She really was.
There's been so many huge moments, the FBI raids, Sarah Palin as Republican vice presidential contender, Ted Stevens loses the election, Ted Stevens is killed, federal prosecutors get in trouble for misconduct. Did you begin to think that you'd never be able to say the end and get the book published?
Well, yeah, especially after the plane crash that killed Senator Stevens and Lisa Murkowski's write-in campaign, Joe Miller. It got to the point, you know, like, all right, we just got to call it quits here. Like, there's another, there'll be another bunch of chapters to write, and, you know, maybe in another edition of the book or something. But yeah, you really did start to feel like, you know,
will
you're just keeping a diary. Yeah, this is like a diary or something.
It just went on and on.
And so do you think that there's a sequel? I mean, I hate to ask you this after you just got done with this enormous amount of work.
I hope not, because one, I would hope that we've learned our lessons as a state and we won't like have some of these outlandish events happen in the future, and we will, you know, somehow learn the lessons. And plus, I really don't want to write another book right now.
Tony Hoffinger and Amanda Coyne founded the Alaska Dispatch. Their book is called Crude Awakening: Money, Mavericks, and Mayhem in Alaska. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the federal government freezes a visa program that brings foreign workers to Alaska's fish processors.
The current economy in America and unemployment numbers going up, that may very well lead us to a higher percentage of U.S. citizens.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
The Fairbanks borough is in a tight legal spot in regard to the Occupy Fairbanks protest. For more than a month now, a few Occupy protesters have maintained a presence at Veterans Memorial Park downtown. Recently, it's included two tents. Mayor Luke Hopkins says the protesters' setup violates borough parks and recreation rules, banning camping at the park. The protesters maintain that given the cold weather, tents are essential to exercising their right to assemble. Mayor Hopkins has so far only discussed the issue with protesters, and at last week's borough assembly meeting, he expressed apprehension about taking a stronger line.
The regulations that I have seen have actions in them that I think step strongly on First Amendment rights.
Hopkins was responding to a comment by Assemblymember Michael Dukes, who pushed for the administration to get tough.
So I'd like to encourage the administration to go ahead and provide them with a deadline of coming into compliance with the Parks and Recs rules so that they have a line in the sand. So they've already crossed it, but we need to give them some firm ground rules to say, you know, today is the day.
The borough legal department has been looking into what it can do about the Occupy camp. Borough attorney Renee Broker says the majority of municipal code is not enforced, and singling out the park no camping rule could put borough government on shaky legal ground.
I am not prepared to go down the road of selectively picking out one and enforcing it, particularly when it involves constitutional issues and other things that could get us in the briar patch really quick.
Broker says she would only be willing to move forward if the assembly formally takes up the broader issue of enforcement of borough code. The borough currently does not have police powers. Mayor Hopkins says city police have been checking in on the Occupy protest, which so far has been quiet and peaceful. The seafood processing industry could soon need more American workers. That's because the program that supplies foreign workers to processors is being frozen because of alleged widespread abuses. KDLG's Dasha Eaton reports.
Glenn Reed is the president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. He says it's hard to say whether the freeze will impact the hiring practices of Alaska processors.
It may require some folks to be limited if their fisheries are increasing, but there may be some balancing in that. As other fisheries have lower forecasts, they may hire less. So it's a fairly complex picture when you look at the whole state.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of State announced that the J-1 summer work travel visa program will be frozen January 1st. That means no additional businesses will be added to the program, and the number of foreign workers will be limited to last year's numbers. The clampdown comes after alleged widespread abuses at the Hershey factory in Pennsylvania this past summer. If salmon runs are bigger than forecast, Reed says the freeze could mean processors may need to hire additional U.S. workers. Reed says Bristol Bay salmon processors have historically relied heavily on the J-1 program to handle their need for a consistent workforce during the region's short, intense salmon season. But if the 2012 forecast of about 22 million salmon is right, Reed says the J-1 freeze won't have much of an effect on Bristol Bay processors.
As far as the Bristol Bay region goes, it looks like if we look at last year's harvest, which was lower than the forecast, last year's actual harvest, it looks like, is about the same as next year's predicted harvest. So my sense is that in the Bay in general, the number of workers that they'll be looking for may be about the same or less.
In recent years, Reed says, Americans haven't been drawn to the processing jobs because so many other opportunities existed. But he admits that as the recession drags on, more Americans might want the jobs.
Generally speaking, these jobs have migrated towards Americans that are immigrant workers or green card holders that are willing to sacrifice time away from family and start at a minimum wage, more so than they have American workers who see the benefits of staying closer to home and seeking employment there, even though the prospects may not be as good. The current economy in America and unemployment numbers going up, that may very well lead us to a higher percentage of U.S. citizens.
In Alaska, the hospitality and tourism industries also rely heavily on the J-1 summer work travel visa program, and the freeze could also impact their hiring. The State Department imposed new rules on the J-1 program in July aimed at strengthening oversight. Despite the new regulations, State Department officials say the number of program complaints received remains high, including reports of improper work placements, fraudulent job offers, job cancellations upon participant arrival in the United States, inappropriate work hours, and problems regarding housing and transportation. So far, there have been no reports of abuses at Alaska's fish processing plants. State Department officials say they are continuing to review the program. In 2011, approximately 103,000 foreign students participated in the J-1 Summer Work Travel Visa program. It's hard to say how many of them work in Alaska, as many are recruited in other states, then flown up to Alaska for work. Today, one recruiting company, the Council for International Travel, brings students representing 32 countries to work in 25 plants across Alaska, including hundreds in Bristol Bay. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
On average, Kodiak residents kill 15 to 20 bears each year in defense of life or property. This year, only one has been killed. Alaska Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist Larry Van Dale says the sharp decline in threatening bear encounters is probably a result of hunter education and a good berry season.
People around here are getting more and more savvy about bear behavior and trying to minimize problems. And, you know, I think the bears probably had a good year for food. Contrary to what we thought earlier, we didn't think the berry crop was very good at all, but it seems that the bears have found plenty of natural food, so that makes a big impact on it also.
Van Dale says the most common situations when humans will have a dangerous encounter with a bear are either during fall hunting or if a bear becomes used to human food or garbage. He says that ADF&G has worked to educate people on how to avoid bears.
The way we've tried to address that is with education. We teach a lot of the hunters as much as we can about what really is a bear attack and how to avoid them. And with regard to town and the villages, we work real hard to try to minimize the places that bears can get human food and garbage, either by improving the landfill sites with electric fencing and putting up bear-resistant dumpsters, or just teaching people that you don't want to keep food or garbage stored in a way that a bear can get to it.
Van Dale gives this advice to those concerned about a bear encounter.
The three main things that you can do is learn about them, and not surprise them, and not attract them to your area.
Vandale adds that if someone is out hunting and a bear gets to their kill first, the meat belongs to the bear. Hunters cannot defend their kill, but can defend themselves.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Although many stores started pushing holiday season buying before they cleared away the Halloween items, on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, the attack on our wallets and credit cards begins in earnest. As KSKA's Len Anderson reports, the Better Business Bureau and the FBI have issued some holiday shopping precautions.
Adam Harkness, Public Relations Manager for the Alaska Office of the Better Business Bureau, says the best way to face the seasonal onslaught of eye-catching bargains is to embrace the Boy Scout motto, be prepared.
It's important to do your homework before you go shopping. Understand the advertisements and coupons, read the conditions, time frames, understand all the limitations to the potential sale. It's really important to understand the store policies on warranties, layaway programs, gift cards, refunds, exchanges. If you research it up front, it could potentially save you a big headache in the long run.
And make certain you bring copies of sale advertisements and coupons with you when you're shopping. Another BB tip, be aware of how easy it is to be lured into overspending for loved ones, family, and friends. Harkness says the best way to thwart that tendency is also pre-shopping preparation.
If you establish that clear budget and really try to stick to it, that's a great way to keep your credit in line, keep your bank account in line, so you don't end up with any of that holiday regret.
Once you start buying items, you need to protect them. The holiday season is not just busy for merchants. It's an active season for thieves. The Better Business Bureau urges shoppers to be extra vigilant of our wallets, cell phones, and credit cards, and even newly purchased gifts in shopping carts. And it's better to stash purchases in your car's trunk than to lay them in plain view on the back seat. In what's become a trinity of seasonal kickoff shopping days, Black Friday is followed by Small Business Saturday and then Cyber Monday. As for the small stores, the Bureau recommends personal exploration expeditions of locally owned retailers, as well as seeking the recommendations of family and friends. Cyber Monday and internet shopping in general can offer wide selection and stay-at-home convenience, but Harkness says it also poses dangers.
Before you click buy, before you empty that digital shopping cart, you really want to make sure that it's a secure website. Look for the S in the address bar. Make sure it says HTTPS. That means that the payment connection is secure.
As for paying?
Better Business Bureau recommends paying with a credit card whenever you can. Safe, secure. You can dispute charges. Most major carriers now have policies of zero liability where you won't be held accountable if your credit card number is lost or stolen. Whenever you're buying online, you want to save any receipts that you have, print them out. Look for the fine print and understand what you're buying and hold on to all of those.
The FBI has also issued holiday shopping warnings about internet scams. In a written release, the Bureau described criminals who advertise and sell merchandise they don't have or purchased with someone else's credit card. Watch out for one-day-only promotions of recognized brands, especially on business websites you don't recognize. Promotions demanding quick action may be a scam. The Bureau also says the safest way to purchase gift cards is directly from the business itself. Both the FBI and Better Business Bureau's Harkness say the holiday season is a time of increased attempts to steal personal information.
Identity theft is a big problem year-round, and there's definitely an increase around the holiday season when people do more shopping online. So just make sure you screen the seller. Go to bvb.org or even just Google around to find a reputable retailer.
Again, Better Business Bureau ratings and warnings can be found on bvb.org. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
A Los Angeles-based production company is making a documentary television series about Army spouses in Alaska. 44 Blue Productions is developing the program for the Oprah Winfrey Network. 44 Blue Vice President Stephanie Draskovich says the reality-type series will explore the experiences of those left behind at Fort Wainwright and Fort Richardson during deployment.
It's a story that I've always wanted to tell, which is, you know, the sort of challenges and adventures, because there's an adventure to it, too, as well. It's a very rewarding lifestyle. But there's also, you know, a set of really unique challenges that come with being a military family and military spouse, especially during deployment.
Draskovich says the 6-12 episode series will focus in on real lives of a few Alaska military families.
Whether it's, you know, celebrating, you know, a 16th birthday while, you know, dad is deployed, to, you know, births while maybe a spouse is deployed, to, you know, maybe mom or dad finishing a degree, or, you know, whatever it is they're doing. So it's really kind of telling the slice of life stories.
Draskovich says the project is a good fit for her company, which also produced a documentary on the Black Hawk Down incident. Draskovich has an Alaska connection. She says her mom's family has deep roots in the state, and her childhood was spent in Anchorage when her father was deployed to Korea and Vietnam.
You know, to be able to kind of bring together my experience as an Army brat, an Army kid, the daughter of an Army spouse, and also to be able to tell the story in Alaska, which has such a close family ties for me, really was, to me, kind of the perfect way to approach the story.
Draskovich says she'll be back in Alaska working on casting in Anchorage and Fairbanks the week after Thanksgiving. She says she's already heard from hundreds of people interested in being on the show. Filming is planned for late winter through early June, with the series likely going to air late next year. The Army is supportive of the project, and 44 Blue has been working with military officials for several months, getting necessary approvals. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton in Dillingham, Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
And by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates four decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.